Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Sometimes the conversations that make us laugh the hardest are also the ones carrying the deepest truths. Today's guest is returning author Terry M. Brown. And while our starting point is her newest novel, Peg Unhinged, this conversation reaches far beyond menopause and midlife mood swings. We talk about grief, identity, resilience, widowhood, humor, reinvention, and what happens when life changes shape in ways we never would have chosen for ourselves. There's something powerful about talking honestly as women about the realities of this stage of life. The hot flashes, the rage, the exhaustion, the laughter, the loneliness, the courage, and the quiet determination to keep becoming anyway. Terry shares the story behind her novel, but she also shares pieces of herself. What writing meant after losing her husband, Bruce, why she briefly wondered if she was done creating altogether, and why she now believes more strongly than ever that women should never allow age to define possibility. This conversation is warm, funny, thoughtful, emotional, and deeply human. Listen now to my conversation with Terry M. Brown. If I told you I could draw a line between Appalachia, woman-created brews and concoctions, xenophobia, historical threats to the Ukraine, self-help, the really, really big dreams of small children, the fierce determination of ordinary women, two people peddling their asses across continental USA, and today I think I'll add in menopause, you'd probably laugh. Well, stop laughing long enough to listen to my conversation with Terry M. Brown, the author who has penned each of that wild variety of stories. Oh, stop looking like that. I've got Terry in my peripheral and I've got to concentrate on my notes. We met Terry just over a year ago as she was releasing the Peddle Their Asses book. It was called 10 Little Rules for a Double-Butted Adventure. Some stories stick with a person, and Terry doesn't know that I was actually quoting her just a few weeks ago as I interviewed another guest. Last year, Terry explained how she creates her storylines, and as I was perusing Amazon today, I was thinking her head must bulge from research with the variety of stories she's written. This spring, Terry is releasing yet another book, and I had to have her back on because, as women in mid-age, most of us have experience with menopause. The title? Peg Unhinged. Because, well, isn't that a pretty accurate adjective to apply to that time of life? Terry M. Brown, welcome back to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are all embracing the journey.
Thank you so much for having me. This has been a fun book to write, and I'm really excited to get it out into the hands of women. So
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, before we get started, I'm going to get personal for just a moment. When we spoke a year ago, you had just lost Bruce, the person you describe as, and I've got to read this, the man who loved you unconditionally, made you laugh, helped you believe in yourself, took you on adventures, double-butted ones, and filled your life with joy. How are you doing?
mostly okay most of the time. I don't know how to, grief is a very interesting animal in that it is unpredictable and you never know at what moment it will strike or why it will strike or how it will strike. And it sometimes leaves me a little gutted, but generally speaking, I am doing well. I've got my writing. He left me in a very good spot in terms of finances, so I don't have that scare. I think a lot of women who lose their husbands end up in a financial bind, and I'm not in a financial bind, which helps. And he was my ardent supporter when it came to my writing. And so when I'm writing, I often kind of feel like he's still sitting there over my shoulder, making sure that I'm moving on. So generally speaking, on most days, most of the time, I'm okay.
I was thinking, looking over your shoulder. I hope he's not checking that your I's are dotted and your T's are
No,
crossed.
he that wouldn't be the kind of checking he would ever do, so that's good.
Oh, good, good. Okay, so let's jump in. We know this. Peg is good at a lot of things. selling beachfront homes, raising two kids, holding her life together with duct tape and dark humor. What she is not good at is menopause, divorce, or watching her soon-to-be ex flirt with women half her age, especially when one of them works in her office. Where did Peg come from? I get the dark humor. Is there a bright side?
Oh, yes. So there's definitely, this is a book that will make you laugh. And I think all women who are approaching menopause or have been through it will see themselves and will have a good laugh because when menopause isn't happening to you, it's rather funny. You know, when you think about hot flashes and forgetting things and I've put my phone in the refrigerator before, and those kinds of things are actually very funny unless they're happening to you. So yes, it's a very light, it's a fun story. But it came to me because I read a story as a little girl, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. And I read it a million times. That was one of those books that I had on my shelf and I would read it over and over and over and over. And then a couple of years ago, I guess it was turned into a movie. And I heard an interview with the author that just got me thinking about the book again. And I thought, whatever happened to Margaret? And my next thought was, oh, she goes by Peg and she's going through menopause. And from that point on, I could not get that book out of my head. So this is not really the Margaret from that story. You know, that isn't her, but that's where that idea came from, is what would it look like that whole group of women who read, Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, are now at the age where they would love to read about some woman who is trying to figure out the landmines of menopause. And so that's where we are.
Figure them out or just live through them, one of
Yeah. Yes.
the two. Oh dear. I love the line, her hormones have other plans. It's a really good reminder that the best laid plans of mice and mid-age women, blah.
Right. And so many times, I feel like it's what I do a lot of times where I say there's this intellectual me that knows the right things to do and say. And then there's that other me that just does what it wants. And then intellectual me is left to pick up all the pieces. And I feel like that's kind of what's going on with Peg, is like she'll have these really good, you know, she knows what she's going to do. She has it all worked out. And then a hot flash. It isn't supposed to be, or rage that just comes out of nowhere. Like one minute she's fine, and the next minute, you know, Katie bar the door, everybody better run. And it's interesting. I have an editor who is younger, and she did say to me that there was a point in there where Peg gets super angry. And my editor said, I don't really know if that, you know, it just doesn't ring true. And I said, How old are you? Because everyone who is 40 and up who reads it understands. Like they say, oh, yeah, that's true. Because to me, menopause is like being 13 again, but even worse. Like your hormones are just all over the place. You have zero control. And I think what's worse is you're now grown up enough that you know you should have control, and yet somehow you do not anymore.
I'll be honest with you, this is going to be an interesting conversation because I have such an had an easy time with
Oh, good
everything
for you.
since the age of 13 that I often say I was born before hormones were invented.
And I think that's the thing that's interesting about this book, is I definitely portrayed like the worst of the worst. Not everybody has all of that, but most people have some of that. You know, like you'll be able to see something in there where you say, oh yeah, I did get forgetful, or I did, you know, and I do. I was very forgetful. I didn't have a ton of hot flashes, but I did have night sweats, which are horrible. You know, you wake up and you're literally laying in a puddle of your own sweat, and you're like, "Well, this is great. You have to change the sheets. You can't go back to sleep this way." And yeah, anger that would come up. I had a lot of just like irrational anger at people who weren't doing anything terrible. But it hit me wrong, and I'm now furious at you. And it's like, where is all of that coming from? And I also, though, the first couple of years of having a period were also pretty volatile, where my
Okay.
hormones, my mom would look at me and know, it would be like, oh, well, we're about to hit that. Everybody run, you know, get your seat behind the couch. Terry's coming out, you know, it's so, yeah.
That might be a good answer to my next question, because I actually, my notes say I need to ask, please forgive me. Is there any autobiography in this piece of fiction?
So, you know, yes and no.
Oh.
So this is not me. I am not a drinker. Peg is a drinker, and she uses her wine as a way to, you know, try to help even things out, and it doesn't go well for her because wine is never really a good choice for evening out your life. And so there isn't that aspect of me. But in terms of some of the things that she felt, some of the things that she experienced, you know, I'm not a real estate agent. I didn't do a lot of the things that I said to her, that, you know, have her do. But a lot of her interior dialogue, I can hear myself. You know, I am definitely a little bit sarcastic, and, you know, I just have that tude that goes on, and so does Peg. And I think that's the reason I was able to write it, is because I understood her. You know, she and I, if she's not really me, but maybe she's like my sister,
Okay.
someone I'm really close to and I really understand. So.
Now, you just triggered a memory because you said that she's a real estate agent, you're not.
Right.
Didn't you write some self-help books at
I
some
did.
point?
I did. I wrote some self-help in the real estate field, but I always had a real estate agent who was giving me information, and that I was helping them turn that into something that they wanted
Okay.
to have out there. So I've never been a real estate agent, though I did a lot of work for a lot of real estate companies in terms of writing. So I feel like I should be a real estate agent. I can tell you the 10 things you need to know before buying your first home, and the 10 documents that you need to make sure that you take to the bank when you go for the first time. And, you know, I have all of that knowledge in my head. So
Does that have any influence on the fact that Peg's a real estate agent, or just
you know,
coincident?
I think it probably does, and I didn't even recognize it. Like, I didn't do it on purpose. But when you're trying to give your character, I wanted her to live at the beach. And part of the reason is I live at the beach, and people are always asking me, do you have a beach read? Do you have a beach read? And I say, well, you can read all my books at the beach, but that isn't what they mean. And
No,
so I
yeah.
thought, well, if I set this book at the beach, it definitely would be a beach read, and that would make everyone, you know, happy. So I needed her to have a job she could be doing at the beach. And the first thing that came to my mind was, well, I'll have her be a real estate agent, because that gets her out in the public. It makes her know things about the island. It makes her interact with other people on the regular basis, where I didn't have to kind of create a scenario for how is she going to meet this person and how is she going to meet that person. It's easy because she's a real estate agent.
And I'm not trying to put you on the spot here, but
No, that's all right.
given the fact that I am well aware of the research you do for your books, and we're going to get into that in a minute, it must have made your life just a wee bit easier, though, in writing this, insofar as, okay, like if to figure out whether it's connections or what she's
Yes.
doing there or whatever, it's just like, okay, you know at least the world if you don't know the
Right.
specifics, and you can
Yes.
tie it together.
It was easy, and it was easy for me to say, I know exactly where to look to find the answer if I don't have the answer, you
Okay.
know. So it was like, oh yeah, I would look up in here. Oh, there it is. That's what I needed to know. Oh, good. That makes sense. And I wrote it in Sunset Beach, which is the beach that I walk on almost every morning. And so the setting was easy, really. And it's a good thing when you think about it. I started writing this book while my husband was ill, and I finished writing this book like 8 months after he died. I finally was able to write again, and I sat down and finished writing this book. And so it's really good that it wasn't a hard one in terms of the research and all of that, because I don't know that I would have had it in me yet.
Yeah,
This was a
okay.
nice one to say, I kind of know where the story's going, and let's just sit down and get this written. So,
Yeah, it makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, it
And as you
does.
started out when I was so nosy at the beginning, it's because grief hits you in so many different ways.
It does,
So
yeah.
this sort of, you were moving forward, but it was
Yes.
almost like there was a little bit of wax on the floor to help slide you
To
along a
help
little
me
bit.
move me along. Yeah, it
Yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
as deep. It didn't have quite as much normally I'm talking about things like xenophobia and racism and things, and those kinds of things didn't come up this time. And that was easier for me, I think, just to not hard time. One of the hardest things though is that Peg is very funny. This is a funny book. People laugh throughout. And after Bruce died, I didn't feel funny. And I really wondered if I would ever be able to finish it. And so when I sat down with it again, I had gone to a writer's retreat in New York. It was 3 weeks long, and I almost canceled going because I had not written a thing up to this point. And I thought, what if I get there and can't write? Like I would feel horrible that I was taking someone else's spot. There could be someone who could really use it. And my daughter convinced me to go, so I went. And when I got there, I immediately could write. I think leaving my home, I went far away. It was a 13-hour drive to get there, and I knew no one, and no one knew me. And I could just be. And I read over the 20,000 words that I had and immediately knew what I needed to do next. And it was really, really good to see that the humor part of me still existed. That, yeah, it had been kind of quieted for a while, but that it still was there and that I could still tap into it and bring it into the book. So that was
Yeah.
a good feeling.
I wonder too if, you were in the right environment as well. I mean, I know there was the distance, but also, like when you go to the library, you read. When you go to the bar, you drink red wine. Oh, except for me. No.
Next, not you,
Just
right?
me and Peg. Just me and
Okay, right.
Peg. But yeah, so oh good. I'm so glad that that all
Yeah.
happened. And as you just said, it this is the first one now. So you're back on
I'm
the
back
wagon,
out
whatever it's
again
called.
and doing, yeah, I'm back doing it again. And I actually have two more residencies planned in 2026, and I have another story idea. So I'm hoping to sit down and at least knock the first draft out pretty quickly and see if I can't, maybe have another one out next year, to see
Yeah,
if I
yeah,
can't
yeah.
get back to the once a year that I was doing. I wondered if I'd be able to do it. I really thought maybe I actually at one point thought maybe I was done writing, that I wouldn't be able to write anymore. And now that I'm writing again, it's like, no, I'm writing. I'm still good. Everything's good. So
Well, and I want to go to some of your other books, but
yeah.
also what a nice way to get back in the saddle with something lighter, because not
Yes.
all of your books are light. They
No,
are the
they're
exact
not.
opposite.
Yes. Yeah.
So, okay, let's start with something easy, self-help books. We touched on that. Were they all real estate or?
They
I'm
were
trying to
all
remember too.
real. They were all real estate tangent. So one of them was like how to stage your home for real estate. One of them was about let's see, how to be a landlord. Was one
Okay.
of them. One of them was about using other people's money to purchase homes for investment purposes,
Oh,
and
okay.
how
Yeah.
to pay them, and it's a
Yeah.
lot of stuff like that. They weren't fun books. They were definitely, this would be, you would only pick this book up if you wanted to be a landlord and wanted to know about like the processes behind all of that.
Right.
So they were, I never felt like they were overly creative. They were just, they paid bills. I had people who said to me, I'll pay you this amount of money to write this book. And I
That's
said,
handy.
super, I will do that for you, right?
Yeah.
And that's not the way it is when you're writing a novel or anything like that. You write it and then you just hope,
Now, children's books. There was one or two.
One, I've got one out now. I have a granddaughter. And she asked me, Gigi, when are you going to write a book for me? Well, the answer is now. Now is when I'm going to do that. And so I did. I sat down. I had had an idea for a children's book. When Bruce and I rode across the United States, there's a lot of time to think when you're on the back of a bicycle pedaling for hours every day. And I came up actually with two different stories. So I asked her of these two storylines, which one do you want? And she picked Little Lola and Her Big Dream. She's the one who named the train Lola. So Lola is a little train and she wants to be an astronaut train. And all of her friends tease her, tell her there's no such thing. So she goes and she tries to figure out what she does want to become. And she talks with other trains who have been other things. In the end, she decides to keep her dream. The best part about this book is I finished writing it, editing it. It's all ready. I have about half of the illustrations are done. And someone sends me an article, and the article is about NASA, who says that they are going to put a train on the moon to move supplies from the light side of the moon to the dark side of the moon because they want to put a space station, permanent space station on the moon. And so there's this article about a train on the moon. So in my author notes, I let the children know that when I started writing the book, there was no such thing as a space train. And now there is. And this is why you keep your dreams. You
Isn't
know.
that amazing?
So
That's
yeah,
great.
it worked. It just worked out beautifully. It was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, dude, I thought I saw somewhere there was another one, but that's okay. Okay, so talk about the anthologies, because you got two or three now. Another
Two
one just
out
coming
and
out.
a third coming. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the two that are out are feist, they're called Feisty Deeds One and Feisty Deeds Two. Feisty Deeds, the first one is it's just about feisty women, feisty historical women. And I wrote a story about a young girl who took over the lighthouse when her father was hurt during a hurricane. And so it was just a fun story to write because I live on the coast of North Carolina, and this was a coastal North Carolina story, and so that was a lot of fun. And then Feisty Deeds 2 is about batches and brews. So it's women throughout history who have baked, made a brew, made a batch, however that was. So with my daughter's A Green Mountain Gap, which is my story set in the Appalachian Mountains of North Carolina, I'm dealing with healers. And the youngest is Josie Mae. And I have had a lot of people say, oh, I wish I knew more about Josie Mae. What happened to her? What happened next? So my short story is Josie Mae at the end of her life. And we get to see, one final time that she's healing and she works with a young girl. And it's a lot of fun. So that's in that one. And then the final anthology that's coming out is called Carolina Tides. And it is written by seven authors. We are all coastal authors. We either live in Brunswick County, North Carolina, or Horry County, South Carolina. So right there on the edge of North Carolina, South Carolina. And they are stories about the ocean. Living at the ocean, being at the ocean. Some are adventure and some are romance. And it was a lot of fun to produce. The best part about that book is that all of the proceeds are going to go to two shelters for abused women. So the one in Brunswick County and the one in Horry County to help women who find themselves in a bad situation.
So just in case we've got a listener who, everybody's always wanted to write the great American or Canadian novel, but they're thinking, well, a short story might be a great place to start. How and maybe they have been writing. How did you find those communities where the anthologies came from?
So the first one, I am a member of WFWA, which is Women Fiction Writers Association. And Women Fiction Writers Association, a group of women said, hey, we want to do some historical fiction short stories. Do any of you want to try to put one in? And I said, hey, sure, I'd love that. So that's where that came from. This other one, is a group of writer friends. And one of them said, I know a group of people who've done an anthology. And I thought, yeah, me too, but ours are very short stories. And there were 25 of us. And that to me is overwhelming. I can't imagine trying to be the editor with 25 women. Like, I can't imagine it. And she said, no, I was thinking of keeping it shorter. So the subtitle to Carolina Tides is A Story a Day for a Week-Long Stay. So
I
if you
remember seeing
come
that.
to the beach for a week, There's a story per day for your week's stay, right? And that was kind of the idea behind it. So the stories are longer. They're about 10,000 words each. But she just kind of said, hey, I'm a writer, you're a writer. And we immediately had five women. And then it was like, okay, who else do we know that we can include? And the next thing you know, we had seven women, story a day, and off we went.
That's amazing. That was great. Now, you were talking about your Appalachia. What was her name, Josie?
Yes, Josie May.
Okay, so you were tied back to Josie May really easily, how it relates now to the story in the anthology. Do all of your characters still have a little piece of your head? Like, are they still living with you?
They do. They're quieter. They've had their story. I think they, I'm not one that tends to do a series. Although I've been wondering maybe if I should, but once you're done with a story, that character becomes quiet. They're still there. Every now and then they'll, you know, hey, I am still here, but generally they're quiet. And then the new character, the one that I'm working on, is the loud one who is demanding all of my attention. Peg was very loud, demanded quite a bit of attention. She's still kind of demanding attention because, you know, towards the very ends of and getting it out and all of that.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
before long, Peg will become quiet, and then the next character, who doesn't yet have a name but does have a little story sort of line that's starting to perk in my mind. So soon I'll have a character with a name, and then that character will live in my head. So
Okay. I want to apologize too if I go to my other monitor here. It's because
that's all right.
you're prompting a question, and I just wanted to make sure. Now, is it An Enemy Like Me that was set in the Ukraine in the days of the USSR?
No, that is Sunflowers Beneath the Snow.
Oh, okay. So, Sunflowers Beneath the Snow. It was, I'm just trying to put, yeah, it was written before the current
Yes,
issues.
so I have this ability to do this because Sunflowers Beneath the Snow came out in January of 22, and in February of 22, Russia invaded Ukraine. And I have been asked so many times, how did you know? And it's like, that is not the way this works. Like, I had this story idea, I wrote it, and then this happened. I had the story idea about a train on, you know, being an astronaut train, and then it happened. Even Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, which is the one about the healers, I started writing, and then my husband was diagnosed with glioblastoma. So I don't know how I do it, and I don't like that I do it. I think my next book may be about world peace because apparently I have some connection.
I was just actually thinking maybe you need to revisit Sunflowers Beneath the Snow and have it end in a beautiful,
in a beautiful way. You know,
Ukrainian
it's
summer.
I know. It's like it's been going on for far too long now at this
4 years.
point. Four years. Yeah, it's and nobody thought it would last that long.
No, exactly. And I
You
guess
know,
where I don't want to get into the depths of something as tragic
right.
as what's going on in Ukraine, but I guess it just prompted me to sort of think, well, you wrote that and you probably started writing it like a year or so before that.
Yeah.
So, like would the current situation prompt some sort of, even if it's not a follow-up, a sister story kind of thing, or is it definitely laid to
Consider no, I
rest?
considered the possibility, but it will have to be once this war has settled. Because otherwise, I think I would feel like I was trying to profit off of something that to me is horrific. And I wouldn't feel good about that. I actually had people ask me, how can you put that book out there now? Don't you feel like you're trying to profit off of the war? And it was like, no, because my book came out before the war. Like, if it had been the other way around, maybe it would have felt awkward, but I didn't. Like, it was already out, and then war broke out, and I'm sorry for the horrible coincidence. So I think I would wait until there was a resolution, right?
Books, movies, all that stuff about a
Exactly.
great disease that encased the world,
Right.
and then
Exactly. And
3 months
then
later,
out
COVID
comes
comes.
right. And it happens a lot. I think partially because there's certain things that are volatile. The relationship between Ukraine and Russia has been volatile for a long time. This was not something new that happened in 22. This was not, no one knew that it would ever happen. Like this has been a true thing. And so it's the same with the idea of like a pandemic. That has been something that people knew could happen, right? And so when it did, they look like, oh wow, we were foretelling, but really you just kind of know what's going on in the world and you recognize that it is a possibility.
And I was just looking here because I thought I saw somewhere too that you actually talked about the USSR, which, like, in terms of the Ukraine, which obviously was like a lot of years ago, you know.
So it started, the book started in the 1970s when Ukraine was still part of the USSR. And then it broke free. And then what's crazy is that what I really am talking about a lot is the 2014 invasion that Russia did, that most people are unaware of, or when I tell them, they're like, oh, that did happen, didn't it? And then, so my book kind of like ends in the 2014, and then it goes out in 22, and lo and behold, it happens again. And when you look at the history between those two countries, this has been going on for generations.
Yeah,
This,
no, for sure. Yeah.
where is the border? Who belongs to who? Who has the rights to this? Who has the rights to that? You know, and it's ongoing. And I'm not convinced that this war will end it either. I mean, it'll end it for a time. And then I suspect that the same problems are going to come up. It's you see this in a lot of countries where over and over and over again there are these border disputes, and they happen a lot. And it's
Yeah, it'd be really easy to slide into politics and
yes,
the world situation at the moment. We
right.
won't do that. Okay,
No.
let's talk about now. Was it okay? Let me go back then to the one.
An
There's an
enemy like
enemy,
me.
me, and then
Yeah.
Daughters of Green Mountain
Green
Gap.
Mountain Camp. Right.
Those are like probably all three of them. But I remember you talking about the research that you did, and you know, like suddenly you'd read something, and you go, ah, there's the connection.
Yes, and that is so that I love that feeling. I love it when I'm doing some research. I have this idea. They're usually vague ideas, but I kind of think, oh, I would love for the story to like edge this way. And then I read something and that's how I'm going to make that happen. Look at that. That's how I'm going to make it happen. So like in An Enemy Like Me, one of the things that I found that I did not know about prior to is I knew that we had encampments for Japanese people during World War II. And people were put in them in for no reason other than the fact that they were Japanese.
Or of Japanese heritage.
Or somehow resembled Japanese. There were people who were Chinese and Korean who were also put in because Americans couldn't tell the difference. And it was fear. Well, what I found out was there were also the same kind of camps for people of German descent. They weren't as broadly used. You tended to have done something where they felt like you had too many connections back to your motherland kind of thing. But there were these camps, and that is what helped me propel my story to give a reason for why a man with a 4-year-old child who was of German descent would consider going to war for the United States when he didn't have to. And so I use that as he was trying to prove that he was American, right? That you didn't have to bother me or my family because I'm American through and through. And so when you find those pieces of information, and then it's like, oh, I can use that. And then what else I really love is I love learning things. So when I find those pieces of information, it's like, woohoo, I just had a little history lesson about something that I didn't know existed.
Yeah, and it's funny too how, once again, and you're so true to life with your fiction because, you know, now it's people of color, it's, you know, Latino people, it's, the list goes on. And as I say, I'm not going to slide into that political place, but,
But the point is, and someone once said to me, like when they were reading Daughters of Green Mountain Gap, someone said, this story feels like it could have happened today. And I said, exactly. When we're reading historical fiction, you will note that the issues that people are facing are very similar. Why is that? We've progressed a lot in terms of how we can communicate, how we can travel, even how we can cook our food. All of those things have really, really progressed. But in terms of emotional growth, in terms of just people still hate, that has not changed. People still envy, that has not changed. People still love, that has not changed. People still have difficult family relationships. That has not changed. People still fear. All of those things, we're still so human that despite all these huge advances that we've made, we've really not come very far, right? And so what you see happening 50 years ago, you'd think that we'd grown out of it. But what we did is we just tweaked it a little. And now instead of looking towards this group, we look toward group, and we're doing the same things over and over and over.
Well, I was just going to say we don't seem to learn from history.
No,
So,
and I think it has a lot to do with just human nature. There's just certain things that we fear. We fear things we don't understand, and when you fear something, you shun it. You do everything you can not to have it near you. And what does that look like? And it looks like internment camps for Japanese, and it looks like anything you'd like to look at in today's world. I mean, that's what it looks like. And yes, it changes slightly in how we do it or exactly what it looks like, but it isn't really changing.
No, for sure.
You know?
So, Appalachia, US, the Ukraine, pretty different locations. Like you might find somebody who, concentrates on settings in World War II or something like that. How does something just lend itself to your imagination and you run with it?
So I tell people that what I really am is a character-driven fiction author. I love a character. I love to see their arc. I love to see them be something and become something more. And I let them dictate where that needs to happen. And so if it needs to happen in, World War II, then that's when it happens. And if, like Peg, it needs to happen today in a modern society on the beach, then that's where it happens. So I don't like being pinned down. I don't like people. I've had a lot of people tell me that I'm a historical fiction author. And the answer to that is yes, I have written historical fiction, but
And
I'm not a historical fiction author because that says that I can't write anything else, or I won't write anything else, or that I'm not allowed to write anything else. And I'm not going to have people tell me what I'm allowed to do. And, I could potentially be harming myself as an author by being all over the page like this, but it brings me joy to sit and write these characters that come to my mind. Peg could not have been written in history. Okay,
true.
women 100 years ago weren't living long enough to go through menopause, and if they were, they weren't talking about it. There was no way to do this story as a historical, and Peg needed to be present day. That's what she needed, and so that's what she got. And little Lola really doesn't have a time period except she's a train, and but she needed to be a train. Why? I don't know, but she did, and it worked, and that's what it needed. And even my 10 Little Rules for a Double-Butted Adventure is still character driven. I happen to be the character, but it's very character driven. It's very much about me and the changes that happened to me and the things that I learned along the way. And so I'm very much a character driven author. And hopefully those people who enjoy my writing style will just go with me wherever the characters want to go.
Right. So let's go to 10 Little Rules for a Double-Butted Adventure, because it's probably the only modern day accurate autobiographical book that you have, like autobiographical in a way that you can't deny. It's funny because as I was writing my notes, I was talking about your different types of books, and I was talking about stories of grit and despair and serendipity, and I use serendipity Because you'll always have that huge exclamation mark in the middle of your memories with Bruce.
Absolutely.
Share as much as you want to about that book.
Yeah, I am so grateful that we went on that trip.
Yeah.
We ended up going in the summer of 2020 because we had planned to, and then COVID hit and we almost didn't get to go. And the following summer really wasn't significantly better for taking a big trip like that. And then the summer after that, he got sick. If we hadn't gone in 2020, we wouldn't have gone. And I'm
But
just
just to
so grateful. Yeah.
back up the bus, because Bruce was a cyclist, if I
Yes.
remember correctly.
Yes.
You, not so much.
Not even. So, yeah, backing all the way up, I had gotten out of a very bad relationship. I spent 14 years in an emotionally abusive relationship, a marriage, and finally got out of that. But when you jump out of something like that, you're not instantaneously better. Like I had a lot of anxieties and a lot of just yuck that I didn't know how to fix. I met Bruce. I was never getting married again. I was never having a relationship again. Bruce tells people that he chased me until I caught him. That's how he put it. He chased me until I caught him. And I had been wanting to do something big. Big and bold. I considered maybe like walking the Appalachian Trail or something really large because I thought I needed to prove to people that I still had value because I didn't believe I did anymore. And I thought everyone else believed the same thing. Turns out no one else had any doubts except for me, but I didn't know that at the time. And so I meet Bruce, and Bruce tells me, I've always wanted to ride across the United States on a bicycle. And I thought, that would be an adventure. Like that would fit the bill. And so I asked him, is it something you're going to talk about until the day you die, or are you going to do it? He said, no, I really want to do it. And I said, count me in. Well, the crazy thing is I hadn't been on a bicycle in 40 years. So we're talking adventure, like huge, huge adventure. It became apparent very quickly, Bruce being an avid cyclist, that no amount of training was going to make me capable of catching up to his level of ability. And so we decided to do it on a tandem bicycle because on a tandem, he cannot go faster than me and I cannot go slower than him. We have to work together. And if we're not working together, we're both not going to make it. And it was the best thing for our marriage. We got 20 years of marriage in 3 months. We had to learn to communicate. We had to learn to work together. We had to learn to catch subtle clues as to how the other person was doing. You had to be up when the other person was down. You had to mold around one another to make it work. And we got a beautiful 20 years in 3 months of time. And I'm so grateful for that. I can't imagine how I would be feeling right now if I didn't have that. That I could look at and say, look at this beautiful, amazing, wonderful thing we did.
Well, and things that I remember from our last conversation are things like Bruce had to learn just to let you cry.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I'm an emotional person. I have big emotions. I laugh really loud. I exclaim over beauty and I sob. I can cry at the drop of a hat. I could give you three things you could say right now, and I could cry on your show with no problem. I mean, it's just who I am. And the first time that this happened on the road trip, he didn't know what to do with me. Like you could see him. He was just like, what am I supposed to do now? You know, and he tried like coming to calm me, like to pat me, and I'm like, touch me. And then he's standing there like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And
Yeah.
then when I was done crying and I said, okay, let's get on the bike. We got to go. He was like, whoa, I feel like I'm getting whiplash. 1 minute you're sobbing, the next minute you're on the bicycle. And I looked at him and I said, well, we can't stay here. You know, and so for me, I need to get out all that emotional gunk. And then I can use my logical brain and say, okay, what really needs to happen here? But I can't be logical if all of that emotion is stewing away. So comes out in cries, and then I can say, okay, now what needs to happen? And yeah, he learned that he just essentially would have a snack and wait for me to finish, and then we would get back on the road again. So.
Yeah, I remember what prompted you telling me the story, that story the first time was apparently coming out of the, was it Portland you started?
Yes.
And it's like all uphill day
It is.
after
It was
day.
horrible. It was horrible. It was just like, and it was hot and it was windy. And you know, when you're first getting started, like my fanny was sore, and it didn't seem like it was a lot of fun. And I realized that this was much harder than I had anticipated that it was going to be. Yeah, I cried a lot. I did a lot of crying. I cried with the cows. I cried on the side of the road. I cried, you know, often in the tent at night because now I'm tired and I don't have any way to keep it all in. And so you just cry yourself to sleep. And, you know, and then the next day I'd get up and be like, all right, what's today going to look like? And I'm sure it was hard for someone who's a fixer. He likes to fix things. And there was no fixing this. You just had to let it happen and then I could fix it. But I had to cry first. It was pretty incredible. But the trip, though it was hard and there were days that were horrible, overall, it was amazing. And I saw the United States at 10 miles an hour, and most people never get to experience the United States that way. And it was phenomenal. I am so glad that I had that opportunity.
That's amazing. Yeah, it's funny just thinking about it. I'm sure it's big in your imagination, and then the reality at the end of day one of 3 months, like 90 days, this is only 1/90th of the way
One,
in,
yeah. Well,
and you're done.
on day one, at the end of the day, I had not eaten well. I wasn't hungry. A lot of times when I'm exercising, I don't feel hungry. I feel hunger when I'm done, but I'm not hungry while. And I did not eat correctly. And you have to consistently eat throughout the day because you're using energy
Oh,
throughout the day, right? So you have to keep feeding the machine. And I didn't do it. And we got to the end of that day. And I'm laying, we had a motel because we were in Oregon, and Oregon had no campgrounds open at this time because of COVID. So we had no choice. So we were in a motel. It was probably a motel without the M and a flashing T. It was, you know, not a good place. But Bruce ordered pizza, and I was laying in bed. I had taken a shower and I was laying in bed. I didn't even dry off. I was so tired, I couldn't dry off. And I crawled into the bed and he brought the pizza over, and I was laying there in bed eating pizza sideways. Just, I mean, it was, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to make it out of Oregon, let alone across the United States. Which really leads to something that's crazy is when we finished, so we're on the last day, and I realized that we've made it across the United States. I'm having trouble believing it. It's like, how did all of those days add up? Because you do not ride from Oregon to Washington, D.C. You ride one day, and then you put that day away, and then you ride another day, and then you put that day away, and then you ride another day. And at the end of all of that, you're in D.C. But it wasn't a continuous ride. It wasn't like we started and we just rode to DC. Does that make sense? So when we got to DC, it was difficult for me to put all of those single days together, which is why I went back and read my blog, which I kept the whole way across. And as I was reading the blog, I saw these life lessons that I learned. And that's where the idea for the book Double Butted Adventures, 10 Little Rules for Double Butted Adventure came up was, look, these are some things that I learned, like very valuable lessons. And it was because I had trouble making that whole trip across. Bruce used to tell people all the time, they would say, where are you headed? And he'd say, to Washington, D.C., but not today. And that's really the way we rode. That's the ultimate goal, but that's not today's goal. And really, at this moment, it might be to the top of that hill. That's the goal right now. And so sometimes we would make our goals so small. I'd say, I think I need a break. And he'd say, do you see that telephone pole? And I'd say, yes. And he said, do you think you can make it to the telephone pole? Yes. And we would make it to the telephone pole and then we would stop. And sometimes that was the goal, right? It's just get to the telephone pole, get to the top of this hill,
You know, and the life
get to that
lesson
shade
there,
tree or whatever.
the life lesson there is like where is the telephone pole in the midst of this problem that you're having, like any problem, especially the big ones where you can't see the forest for the trees. But to just think, if I can just get to, whether it's bedtime tonight or to this next place or this whatever, get one tiny issue resolved,
It's
it's.
how can you break it down into small enough bites? There's this question is, how do you eat an elephant? And it's
One bite.
one bite at a time. That's exactly it. You don't eat an elephant. Like you can't just eat the elephant, right? You have to know what you're doing. You have to do it small steps. And yeah, that is one of the big lessons that I learned was, break it down. Make it small enough that you can digest it. Give yourself a pat on the back for getting to that next telephone pole.
When I mentioned quoting you, I believe I was quoting you, quoting your friend, because it was never quit on a bad day. And
That has been a big one for me. Never quit on a bad day. And the other one is do hard things. And both of those have gotten me through this last year. Because sometimes you do want to quit. There are days where it's just like, I can't do this anymore. And I don't mean quit forever. I've never felt that bad, but just like, I'm just going to go crawl in bed and pull the covers over my head. I'm just not doing this anymore. And it's like, nope, this is a bad day. We don't stop life on a bad day. We're going to keep doing it. And then the other one is, you can do hard things, which I say to myself almost every morning when I think I don't want to do today. And it's like, come on, you can do hard things. And I get out of bed and I go do hard things. So,
I was interviewing an extreme hiker, and she started hiking like after age 50 or something like that. So older, midlife, shall we say, older than your usual, 22-year-old super fit hiker. And just recently, she was hiking the Canary Islands, and for whatever reason, I mean, you'd think the Canaries would be nice. The weather turned, it was raining, she ended up soaked to the skin and cold, and she was concerned about hypothermia, so she stopped. She said, "No, not going to finish this hike at this moment in
At
time."
this time, right.
So she ended up going back to England, and I said to her, like when I was reading that part of her story, that I was thinking of you with that comment of never stop or never stop on a hard
Quit
day. And
on a
she
bad
said,
day, right.
I thought about that. I said, okay, but we're talking health here when you're talking
Right,
hypothermia.
right.
So I said, let me quote someone else. And years ago, I knew someone who said, a bad decision is your best available data.
Right.
And so she said, oh, okay, that makes me feel better, because she can always
Yeah,
go back
so
and finish the
you
Canaries,
can go back and finish it. And the thing is when I give rules like this, these are not absolutes. There are always like don't quit on a bad day, unless someone's, beating you over the head with a lead pipe, at which point maybe this is a good time to quit, right? Or I'm going to die of hypothermia. Well, that's never quit on a bad day is more about the emotional quits. When you're quitting because I'm just frustrated and I'm done and I don't want to do this anymore.
Tired and everything hurts.
The sun rose in the east again today and I'm done. Those are the days that I say, don't quit on a bad day. Of course, if you are in danger, if your health, if a pandemic comes and you've got to leave now or you're going to be stuck in the Canary Islands for the next 14 months. Well, of course, those are the days that you quit and go home. So,
The advantage of hiking in the Canaries is you probably wouldn't know there was a
you
pandemic.
wouldn't,
At
you
least
wouldn't.
you'd be fine. You'd be fine for a few weeks. Oh dear. Okay, talk to me about these awards. I was going through your books on Amazon, and it was like there was a couple of nominations. There was the odd shortlist. There was like several dozen, not even including the anthologies, of winner gold prize. Like, how does that happen?
People think that awards happen because the award committee goes out and searches for books. It is not the way it happens. Instead, as an author, you search for awards and then you say, does my book have a shot in this award? And then you put it in and you see. And so I just think it's really, there is something really beautiful about winning an award. As an author, what you do is very solitary. You know, I have the idea on my own. I write it on my own. True, you have an editor and other people, but they do their piece on their own, and then they give you notes and you go and fix it on your own. There's a lot of on your own, and you don't get a ton of kudos. You know, there's not a lot of you know, patting you on the back. Oh, Terry, you got through your first draft. Pat, pat, pat. There just isn't that, right? It's and unless you're patting yourself, it's not happening. And so when you win an award, it feels really good. And so I'm just a big believer in put your book out there, see what, you know, get it into the hands. And then when I do win an award, oh my gosh, it just makes me feel so amazing. It's like someone else is agreeing with me that this was worth the effort that I put into it. You know, because financially, authors, unless you are a big, big name like Stephen King, authors are not breaking bank. You know, we're hardly making ends meet. And so you're not getting the big kudos in the ways that other people often get them in something they do that they love to do. And yes, so the awards are really great. I won an award, found out about it in October, that is really changing things for me. I won, it's a North Carolina award, and I'm a North Carolina author, and it is the North Carolina Humanities. They pick five books from North Carolina authors, and they picked Daughters of Green Mountain Gap as one of their books. And it is being like, I'm going to be in an online book club. And now, because North Carolina Humanities picked my book, I have libraries across the state who are asking me to come speak. I've gotten my first keynote speaking event at a literary event. None of these things were happening for me before. And it took having an award that mattered to someone to say, oh, maybe she is an author, you know, instead
Yeah.
of pat, 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 isn't that sweet? You have a little book. And all my awards weren't, I mean, they helped a lot. It's not that they didn't help, but they weren't getting me in the places that I wanted to be in. And then this one award was the one. And what I love the most about this one award is it is the only award that I did not place myself in, because an author cannot place themselves in it. A
Oh.
librarian is who suggested the book.
How much did you pay her?
And I didn't.
I'm
I
just
didn't.
joking. I'm
No,
just joking.
but you know what's crazy is I didn't even know I was in the running. I didn't even know about it until toward the very end. And it was like, oh my gosh, you mean I'm in the running for this thing? Like, I didn't even know. I didn't even know. And so that one means even more to me, because it wasn't one that I sought out, but that they actually found me. And that's a rare thing. So,
That's amazing. And I
but
guess
if
too
I could have paid her, I would have. That's
don't say that. She might hear this and go, okay, after the fact.
okay.
I'll go back and collect. Ah, dear. And I was just going to say, first of all, I guess a question is, do you have now a list of awards that you go, oh yeah, I can apply for that one or that one or that one, submit for that one. Yeah.
I definitely have a list, and I think about my book, and I think about the categories that they
Yeah.
do books in, and does this really fit? And you know, they all charge money, so it isn't free to
Oh, right.
enter.
Okay. Let's like the
And
podcast
so,
awards.
yes. And so you have to kind of look and say, do I, you know, like, how much money do I want to invest into this? You know, and now that I'm on, you know, novel number four, I've got other books out besides the novels. I think I'm getting a little pickier. It's kind of like, yeah, I can do all of them again, but maybe I only really want, like, this one would really, I would really love to win this one. you know, or I like to go back and ones that I didn't win, try again with a different book. And it's like, you know, maybe now, maybe I've gotten better. Because that's something else, is that with each novel, I want to see improvement in myself. I want to know that novel number three is better than novel number two in terms of my writing style. You know, I don't ever want to say I've reached the pinnacle and I'm never going to get better from here. Like, I want each book to be the best one. You know, this is now my best book. So.
And I guess too, the other side of applying for all these is in terms of the committee who will look at the books who all get nominated.
Right.
You just named a librarian. Like, if there's a librarian who reads that, even if you don't win, if that librarian has read it and said, "Holy moly, I'm
Oh.
going to recommend this to my whatever professional
Yes.
association they belong to," then, once again, it's you may not win that award, but you've won something over here that, yeah.
Exactly. And you know, other things, like I do a lot of in-person events. And I even do, because I live at the beach, we have a lot of these craft fairs, lots of them.
Okay.
They happen weekly. And I get involved, and I'll go and I'll sit at these craft fairs. And I was at a craft fair one time, and it was relatively a bust. It was too early in the season, not too many people coming through. I think I only sold maybe 4 books in 4 hours. It was really not worth sitting out there all day. However, one of the books that I sold was to a woman who is in a book club with 32 people.
Oh,
And
perfect.
she liked the book enough that she said, "Hey, why don't we read this?" And then I sold more books a few weeks later. So I always try to look at anything I do through a long lens. You can't say this one thing was no good, because it turned out that, yes, I only met 4 people that day, but one of them turned into someone who had me with a book club of 32.
And one of those people in that book club of 32 actually belongs to another book club. And
Yes.
she thought, this is going to make my life easy if I can have both my book clubs read the same book.
Exactly. And
So.
what was really crazy is that this woman had this book club, and some of the people were people that she knew in a town in Pennsylvania, and they flew to have this big book club. Usually they did it online, but this time they flew and I was there, and wasn't this fun, right? And the person from Pennsylvania is in a book club, and I went and did a like a Zoom book club with in Pennsylvania. And
Oh,
so,
wow.
and that's all from an event that anyone else could have looked at and said, not worth your time.
Yeah.
So
That's amazing.
you have to have kind of a long game attitude
Yeah.
of, you know, so whenever I go somewhere, like I was to an event not too long ago, and very few people showed up. The people that showed up were great. We had a wonderful conversation, and I had a librarian say, "I'm sorry, I wish we had more people." And it was like, don't ever be sorry. These are 4 people in a different location that had not heard of me until today. And who knows where that will go.
Yeah. And it's
So,
the same
yeah.
with podcasting, like
Podcasting, it's
it's
right.
better to have like 100 attentive listeners than 1,000
Right.
people who just happen to have you on the phone but never listen.
Right. And so you never really know what's going to happen next. And I think that the big thing is showing up. I show up. I show up on social media. I show up on my podcast. I show up on other people's podcasts. I show up to in-person events. If there is something that I can be doing, I try to make sure that I am doing it. And then that way, when the break happens, I'm ready, because I've been showing up the whole time, you know. And you just never really know which of those show ups is going to be the one, you
And
know,
you've got
for.
such a bright face when you're
Oh,
like right
thanks.
now, you got this huge smile, you're so bright face that I'm sure if you go to one event and it may, whether it's a good, bad, or indifferent,
Yeah.
if you go to the next event, somebody's going to say, "I remember
They
you."
do. And that's the funny thing is I'll go to an event with, you know, 32 women, and they all now know me, but I don't know them. That was 32 people I met all in one room, and you know, we were talking about the book. And then I might be at post office, and some lady will go, "Remember you? You were at," and they'll name the event, and they'll say, "Do you remember me?" And it's like, remember that event. You know, I
Yeah,
do remember
I
the event.
remember your face, but just don't last me to tell you your name.
Like it's really it, but that's that is there's just something really fun about that to
Yeah.
I love what I do. I love being an author. I love writing. I love talking about books. I love talking to other authors. I love talking about books that I wrote and other people wrote. All of that's fun for me. And so if I get to do any of that during a day, then it's a good day and we just move on from there. And I don't try to count numbers to justify it.
I'm once again back on your website. Don't you have like a book club, like, or like you do book reviews or something?
So I do book reviews. I do the book reviews because I do my podcast. So I have a podcast online for authors. And
Oh,
before
okay.
I bring an author on, I read their book. So
Okay,
I always read the book first. And then I do a review and I have them on my podcast. So from me, they get the podcast and then they get the review. And I do a blog with the review on it. And I put the review out on all of the review sites and all of that as well. So, and what's really great about that is I get to meet all of these cool authors, which is so much fun, and I'm not paying for any books because the authors give me a digital copy of their book, which I can then read on Kindle, and I haven't bought a book in 2 years. It's fabulous. Yeah.
like the puzzle lady that I interviewed a few months
Yeah,
ago.
I mean, there's it's just another aspect of finding that writer community. And I love the writer community. They're giving wonderful people. Nobody hoards secrets like, oh, I know how to make a lot of money and I'm not telling you. It's not the way it is. It's like if I've learned something that works for me, I'm willing to tell anybody because my success, your success isn't going to ruin my success.
No,
You know,
exactly. Yeah.
people read more than one book a year,
Yeah.
or at least the people who are going to read my books read more than one book a year. So.
I'm going to glance over here, see if I can spot the. I'm not going to see it. I've just been looking at several things about you online, but my question behind it is, talk to me about the sea.
Oh, I love the ocean.
I know.
I love the ocean. It calms me. I can be in a complete snit, just unable to think, feeling, you know, that feeling where your whole body is just tight and you're just, and I come up over the dunes and the wind, and you hear the ocean and you smell it and you see it, and my whole body melts. And I just, and you just feel it. Just, I don't know what it is. And I'll start walking. And usually the first part of my walk, there's a lot of what I call storming. And my mind is going. And soon I realize that I'm not storming anymore. I'm walking almost in tune with the waves. I'm breathing in tune with the waves. And then creativity opens up. It's like I got cleaned house. I got rid of all of the junk. And now my creativity is like, good, a space to play, and out it comes, and I get some of my best ideas when I'm out walking. It's amazing. I think the other thing the ocean does for me, it's vast. It's enormous, and it does the same thing over and over. The waves come in and they go out. The tide comes in, it goes out. My problems are so small in comparison to that vastness. I know that whether I'm angry or not, the waves are coming in and they're going back out. And it there's just something really settling about recognizing.
There's something about the rhythm of nature.
That just makes you recognize I'm a cog in a wheel of something that's going to go long after I'm gone. And this problem that I'm facing is huge to me, but it's not huge to the world. And I don't know. Sometimes that makes me angry. I need my problem to be huge to the world, but generally speaking, it helps me put it into perspective. You know, is this going to matter tomorrow or the next day or a year from now? And if the answer is no, maybe we can just leave it here at the beach. I tell people that they probably shouldn't walk too close behind me while I'm walking because I'm shedding all kinds of junk and they don't want it to jump on them. Like stand back, give me the space, because you don't want all of that jumping on you.
Don't be downstream from
Yeah.
the guy that's
Yes, seriously. Yeah, exactly.
peeing.
Exactly.
Oh dear. Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about?
I think mostly what I want mid-age women to understand is there's a lot of life left between mid-age and the end, whenever that comes, right? That you don't have to stop being or becoming or learning or reinventing, that you can do that up until the last breath if you choose to. And that has been a beautiful thing for me to recognize, because there was a time where I thought my life was done, that I was done. And look at me. Since then, I mean, I thought I was done. And since then, I now have four novels. I have my memoir. I've been in three anthologies. I have a children's story. I have another idea for another novel. I'm speaking in public. I have a podcast. And all of that has come about since I initially had the idea that I was done. And so, yeah, don't be done unless you want to be done. I mean, if you want to be done, if you want to now just sit calmly and quietly, and that's what like turns you on and makes you happy, then by all means do that. But don't do that because someone told you, you're nearing retirement and it's time to be done and you need to be quiet over in a corner somewhere and don't bother the rest of us who are, making life. No. Go be bold and be who you are, and yeah, be bold, be who you are, even if that makes other people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's funny because I get jeepers. It's been a year and a bit now that basically the theme for the podcast is that was then, this is now, create your own next chapter.
Right.
And I can't tell you what that's going to be. You can't tell me what that's going to be. Just
No.
make sure you are creating it, not settling for it.
Right. Like be involved with it. Don't settle for what other people say a 50-year-old woman should be doing or a 60-year-old woman should be doing. Do what you
I
want. Or
want you to go up with
70, 70, 80, 90, like 100,
the
120, as far as I'm concerned. Like don't let some number and a societal norm define who or what you are going to be or become next. And my goal is on the day I die, I want my hair to be on fire and I want to be like diving into home plate. Like I don't want to have stopped. I hope that I can keep doing me in whatever capacity that looks like. Will I always be writing a book a year? I have no idea. Maybe I'll write four a year, maybe I'll write one every 4 years. I don't know. But whatever it is, I hope that I'm still being who I want to be and that I'm making those decisions, that I'm the one that gets to be in charge of that.
I have a meme that actually, and you've probably seen it because it's everywhere, that says sort of don't arrive, I don't know, like quietly at death.
Yes.
I want to be sliding into the grave with chocolate in one hand, wine in the other, screaming,
Yes.
"Yoo-hoo, what a
You
ride."
who, by right. Yes. And that's very
Yeah.
much, it's very much the attitude that I have now is, it's not that you can't do quiet things if quiet things are what make you happy. Like, by all means, do the things that are making you happy, but do it with gusto. Like, make sure that these quiet, happy things, that it's really making you happy, not just quietly satisfied in a corner. I don't want to be quietly satisfied in a corner. I want to be as happy as I am sad. I want to be as joyous as I am grieving. I want all of the, I want all of it. And I don't want to be quiet in a corner. So I'm
I
not
don't
going to
want
be.
much. I just want more.
Yes.
Okay, back to Peg. Is there
Yes.
anything after Peg yet?
So I do have an idea. It is a historical fiction, but it's going to be a dual timeline, and there may be a bit of a mystery involved. And It's still very much perking in my mind, and so I can't really say a whole lot about it. But there is something. It's called a quipu, Quipu. It's something that ancient native tribes used, and they thought for a long time it's these knots that they would put in these strings, and they thought that it was for keeping things like how many sacks of grain we have and how many animals. And not too long ago, they recognized that some of them actually told stories, that they were a way of keeping history. And I have this idea of a woman who's an anthropologist. She's adopted. She gets into anthropology to learn more about her history. And she becomes enthralled with this quipu that has a story that no one can figure out. And I almost want the story to her to realize that it's like a relative, like, a several generations back grandmother who has left her a message. I don't know, but that's kind of the general gist of what's going on in my head. We'll see what happens with that.
Oh, that's amazing. Oh, Lord. Okay, where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
Best to go to my website. It's my name, terrymbrown.com. That's Terry with one R. There you find everything. You'll find my books, you'll find my podcasts, you'll find my newsletter, all my social media icons are there. And I even just have a reach out and say hello to me page, if you just wanted to ask me one question but really didn't want to dive in and do the whole thing. So it's all there.
There we go. I don't know if you remember, but I ask if I can ask a personal question before we go.
Absolutely.
The last time you were here, we talked about the bike trip, the
Yeah.
strength you discovered in yourself. Since then, your life has continued to evolve. When you look at the woman who wrote Peg Unhinged, the woman who finished Peg Unhinged, is she different from the woman who rode that bicycle across the country?
Yes. Yes. I think in some ways I'm stronger, and in some ways I'm weaker as I'm learning to figure out what does life look like as a widow. This is not something I asked for. I have changed who I am before, but it's always been I made the decision that I wanted to change. And quite frankly, I was very, very satisfied in the relationship that I was in and in the life that I was living. And I didn't see any need to change. And then I had no choice. And so I think part of me is much stronger because I've realized I can do it. And some of me is still floundering around as I try to figure out, whoa, what does this piece of me do now without this person by my side, who was my person? He was definitely, the person that I've waited for my whole life to be that companion. I now know what that looks like and what that feels like. And I'm so grateful for that. But now what do I do? And when it's thrust upon you and you weren't asking for it, it's a much harder transition than if you choose. If you choose, if you say to yourself, that's it. I'm making a change. I can't stand what I'm doing anymore. It's not that it's easy, but you know that you made the decision. And when instead something else comes along and forces that decision on you, it's harder change because there's part of me that's still very much gripping the past and I want to keep it. I want to keep it and I can't because it doesn't exist anymore. And so it's a little harder. I'm going kicking and screaming a little more than I was in other changes. And so yeah, I am a different person, but I think that if you talk to me a year from now, I'll say yes again. And a year from then I'll say yes again. And my intention is to keep changing. To keep growing and to keep becoming and to keep figuring out what's next?
Evolution in motion, in action.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Your website link is in the show notes. All of the links
Awesome.
are on your page at our website. You're going to have two pages now, so it'll be Terry Ann
Woo.
Brown 2. Listeners, if this conversation with Terry sparked a thought for you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment and tell me what part resonated most with you. If you enjoyed hearing Terry today, do me a favor. Think of one friend who would appreciate this conversation and send it to her. Podcasts grow the same way good book clubs do. One woman telling another woman, you've got to hear this. If you haven't already, follow the podcast so these conversations arrive in your feed each week. And if you want to listen early, I release each episode on Substack on Wednesday evening now before it goes live everywhere else on Thursday. Terry M. Brown, so good to see you again. Congratulations on the new book. And yeah, as we started out, I am sure so many women are going to identify with Peg.
I think so too. I think so too. And I want to thank you for allowing me to come on again. I so enjoy talking with you.
Yeah, no, as when I saw your email, it was, and then when I read, it was like, well, of course you're coming on. That's great. And just another aside to the listeners is there will be a link to last year's conversation with Terry in the show notes as well. So that's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the week.